The description of Yaakov Vayelech Harana, that he went to Haran, to Syria. Yaakov was perplexed by a conundrum. The brachos of Avram could only be manifest in Eretz Yisrael. When Yitzhak was faced with famine and wanted to leave Eretz Yisrael, Hashem barred Yitzhak from taking this step. If leaving the promised land was forbidden, why did Hashem tell Yaakov to do so? Was not his mission as an ancestor of the Jewish people bound up with the land of Israel? Yaakov surely asked himself, can I really succeed in building a community in Haran? Why should I leave behind the myriads of adherents whom Avram and Yitzchak trained? Apparently it was Hashem's will that Yaakov begin anew with a community of 12 souls, and ultimately that would become 70. The pasuk, of course, referring to the fact that Yaakov's family entered Mitzrayim as 70. In Haran, Yaakov was called upon to start a new community with a handful of children. Here Hashem teaches a fundamental truth about Yahadus. The wisdom and moral principles are recognizable and understandable in every location, in every country, even on the moon. Had Yaakov not left Beersheba, the community would have been limited only to the land of Israel. Yahadus must also be taught outside of Israel. It says, "V'hinei malachei Elokim olim v'yordim bo." He perceived what? The angels of God going up and down the ladder. According to the Midrash, Yaakov's image was engraved on the Kisei HaKavod. In Yaakov's dream, the malachim, the angels, ascended the ladder to look upon the image, then descended the ladder to look upon Yaakov on earth, marveling at how the images were identical. When man sins, his external personality deviates from his pure inner self. Because Yaakov was without sin, the images of the ideal Yaakov, etched on the Kisei HaKavod, and the real Yaakov on earth, were exactly the same image. Sin splits the personality into Tamei and Tahor components. Yadus desires the unity of the individual, in keeping with the imperative to maintain the image of God. Imitatio Dei is the foundation of human existence. Since God is one, our own goal must be to emulate this attribute as closely as possible. The Torah never accepted the dictum that the body is intrinsically impure. On the contrary, man must strive toward sanctification of the body. Yadus desires that man be internally consistent, without conflict or contradiction. He describes Hashem as Elokei Avraham Avicha. I'm sorry, Hashem describes himself as Elokei Avraham Avicha veElokei Yitzchak, the God of, meaning in the possessive, the God that belongs to Avram, your progenitor, and the God that belongs to Yitzchak. Avram's belief in God's existence solidified when he was 40 years of age. Yet Hashem did not reveal himself to Avram until he ordered Avram to enter the land of Canaan, which was at the age of 75. Imagine the difficulties that Avram faced during that long interim period as he attempted to defend his newfound faith. His peers surely scoffed at him, derisively inquiring, "Avraham, you say there is a supreme being? Have you ever seen him? Have you ever spoken to him?" Avram searched for Hashem without his help, proving Hashem's existence through nature. Avram could neither point to nor display miracles to prove Hashem's existence. Because none of his contemporaries searched for him, Hashem was in a sense ownerless. Hashem was Hefker until Avraham claimed him as his own, in accordance with the applicable laws of finding lost objects, is laid out in the second parak of Bava Metzia. Upon close examination, the Torah recounts very few miracles surrounding the lives of the progenitors. The only true supernatural occurrence was the birth of Yitzchak, and this miracle cannot compare, for example, with the drama of the splitting of the Yamsuf or the 10 plagues. Sarah's miracle was hidden, not as spectacular as the plagues or the giving of the Torah. Nor were there overt miracles in Yitzhak's life or in Yaakov's. To the contrary, Yaakov's life was beset by problems. The hatred of Esav, the machinations of Lavan, the selling of Yosef. Yet despite formidable obstacles, our progenitors, they promulgated Hashem's name and they fathered the chosen people. It is for this very reason that Elokei Avraham, Elokei Yitzchak, the God belonging to Avraham, the God belonging to Isaac, are constructed in the possessive form. This usage suggests that each of our forefathers retained a type of ownership. They created a kinyan in Hashem, as it were. Although we assert, L'Adoshem Haaretz Umloa, right, to God belongs the earth in its fullness, man can reciprocally attain ownership rights in Hashem himself. The Avos and Imos, they attained this ownership through their self-sacrifice, through the difficulties they endured. It says, when Yaakov wakes up, he says, Achein yesh Adoshem b'makom hazeh, v'anochi lo yadati. Indeed, the Lord is in this place, and I was not aware. Hashem's revelation at times of crisis, from the depths of despair and distress, is a basic principle of Yadus. Sometimes Hashem does not reveal himself to the contented soul. He reveals himself to the mute soul, battered by weariness and exertion. Sometimes Hashem reveals himself to one who grieves for the ruin of his temple and the destruction of its altars, while avoiding one who dedicates the temple and stands at the side of his offering. Sometimes Hashem does not reveal himself to the rational individual, but to one who is confused about life, who is bankrupt and has lost track of this world. From time to time, man's salvation comes out of distress. Even the most spiritually elevated members of the Jewish people first encountered Hashem at a time of raging fear, a time of helplessness or distraction, when they were not anticipating such an encounter and were thoroughly surprised by it. Yaakov comes close to his God in a nocturnal dream while sleeping on the cold stones of the place. Moshe encounters a burning bush at a time when he is pasturing Yisro's flock, entirely devoted to this simple everyday occupation. Yechezkel sees visions of Hashem in exile on the river Kfar, at a time when the appearance of the present, full of quaking and horror, contradicts the vision of a glorious future. Yadus has firmly established the halachic principle that even when man confronts an unchangeable evil decree, that decree coming from God, even when a man's prayers are rejected and thrown back in his face, a person must see God, must conjoin with him, in spite of the tragic reality that weighs him down. Because Hashem reveals himself through suffering and tragedy when the individual or the community is in trouble and distress. It describes Leah's eyes, the Enei Leah Rakos. Her eyes were soft, were tender. Rashi explains that Leah's eyes were red due to her crying. Why did she cry? Because she felt that she was destined to marry Esav. As the elder sister in Lavan's family, she would marry the eldest son in Yitzchak's. Most girls in her situation, they would have resigned themselves to this fate. This is not so of Leah. Under no circumstances would she accept this outcome. She therefore conspired with Lavan to fool Yaakov. Lavan could not have accomplished this trick without Leah's complicity. If she could somehow have married Yaakov using conventional means, she would definitely not have resorted to this subterfuge. With every fiber of her being, Leah desired to be a mother of Knesset Yisrael. God desired that her great dream would be realized, but only under difficult circumstances, through her sheer assertiveness. It says, Vayihiva boker vihinehi Leah. And it came to pass in the morning, and behold, it wasn't Rachel, but it was Leah. Based on verses in Yirmiyahu, Perek Lamed Aleph, Psukim Yud Daled through Tes Zayin, the Midrash which is a psichta midrash, that's the 24th psichta to Medrash Eicha. It describes how after Israel was led to exile, each of the forefathers begged Hashem to redeem them. No plea was accepted until Rachel wept on behalf of her children. Rachel mivaka al baneha. Only then did Hashem promise redemption to the Jewish people. What accomplishment of Rachel caused God to listen only to her? The answer? She revealed to her sister Leah the simanim, the signal, through which Yaakov was to have identified her at her wedding, so as to avoid shaming Leah. Rachel's act of compassion toward an unfortunate sister evidently carried more weight than other more dramatic heroic acts of our ancestors. Hashem accepted Rachel's sacrifice as the most sublime. And therefore, in Yirmiyahu's prophecy, he addressed himself exclusively to her. After the birth of Yehuda, it says, Hapam Odes Hashem. Leah says, this time I will thank Hashem. The concept of thanksgiving involves expressing gratitude to Hashem for that which has been attained, while accepting that it is impossible to acquire everything which one desires. Only after her fourth son was born did Leah finally resign herself to the truth of her relationship with Yaakov. A woman has two great needs. She wants to be loved by her husband, and she craves children to whom to give her love. Leah realized that even after giving birth to three sons, there would be no fundamental change in Yaakov's relationship with her. Rachel would always remain the greater object of his love. With Yehuda's birth, Leah finally relinquished the hope of ever being Yaakov's beloved one. Yet, nevertheless, she was grateful to Hashem that she had four children to love and care for. Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai mentions in Brachos, Masechta Brachos, Zayin Amud Beis, that Leah was the first to offer thanks to Hashem, since she was the first to assert that Hashem must be praised for any blessing he bestows upon us. The name Yehuda later became associated with the Jewish people itself. Despite the suffering and persecution which we the Jews have been subjected to, we remain thankful to Hashem for the privilege of having been selected as his people. Rachel says, V'tomer el Yaakov, Hava li vanim. Rachel is a silent, mute woman who lived a sacrificial life and died young. In distress and despair, as a barren woman who was condemned to loneliness for the rest of her life, she abruptly exploded. The request she made of Yaakov, it betrayed her desperation. When one reaches an impasse at the point of exhaustion, feeling a night of loneliness descending, the response is to explode incoherently. Rachel's demand was a shriek of hopelessness. This is the extreme emotional reaction of someone who suffered silently, hidden, and now yells in emotional torment. When Leah traded the Dudaim for the ability to spend the evening with Yaakov, it describes Vateitze Leah Likraso, that Leah ran out to greet Yaakov as he was coming back from work. There is an enigmatic medrash which suggests that Leah dressed like a prostitute when she ran out to meet Yaakov. The medrash does not mean to be taken literally. It is an analogy in the sense of fearlessness, of haste, of boldness, and occasionally even impudence. Leah's exchange with Rachel in regard to the Dudaim reflects assertiveness, as Leah was undeterred to take any legitimate steps to realize her dream. Leah did not have the patience to wait for Yaakov. She hastened his arrival. Leah went out to meet Yaakov, whom she loved so much. And out of their union that night, God gave her a great and wonderful gift, her son Yisachar, who would become a Shevet amongst the nation of Israel. At the end of the Parsha, Lavan says to Yaakov, Yesh le'el yadi la'asos imachem ra. I have the power, yesh la'el yadi, to inflict harm upon you, you in the plural. Yesh la'el yadi la'asos imachem ra. In the Haggadah, the Chachamim introduce Lavan as the enemy of our people. When we study Parshas Vayetze, however, we perceive Lavan as a liar, a cheater, an exploiter, but we don't perceive him as a killer. How do Chazal know that Lavan was a Jew hater? Arami Oved Avi, he tried to annihilate, eradicate his son-in-law and his family. Apparently, Chazal were sensitive to the meaning of this verse. God came to Lavan, the Arami, in a dream at Bachalom Laila, and he said to him, Yishamer, be very careful, lest you speak with Yaakov either good or bad. If the Almighty found it necessary to contact Lavan and warn him against inflicting any harm on Yaakov, we may assume that Lavan intended to do great harm. Apparently, Lavan did not intend to rebuke Yaakov, but to annihilate Yaakov. Otherwise, God would not have revealed himself to Lavan. In this verse, Lavan himself admits what his intention was. Yeish le'el yadi, you know, I have the power to inflict harm upon you. But the God of your father spoke to me last night saying, beware of speaking with Yaakov, either good or bad. Lavan said he wanted to avenge himself against Yaakov. Only the intervention of the Almighty prevented him from executing his evil plan. More significant is Lavan's use of the plural form, la'asos imachem ra, to do with you in the plural evil. If he was addressing himself to Yaakov, he should have used the singular, la'asos imecha ra. But he was speaking to his own two daughters and his own grandchildren. If God had not warned Lavan the night before, he would have exterminated not only Yaakov, a foreigner, a son-in-law, but even his own children and grandchildren. He would have done this if not for Elokei Avichem, the God of your father. He did not say Elokei Avicha, the God of Jacob's father. He identifies the entire family, his own daughters, his own grandchildren with Yaakov. He admits that if not for Elokei Avichem, he would have destroyed everyone, including his daughters and grandchildren. Nothing short of divine intervention would have stopped Lavan from implementing his plans. In comparison to Lavan, Paro was stable. Paro was immoral. He was an exploiter, a slave driver, but he was not criminally insane. He made money from his slave society. The temptation to exploit the Jews was too strong. He wanted to keep them downtrodden, but he did not try to wipe them out, nor did he wish to harm his own family. Lavan proves that hatred of the Jew, it can reach psychopathic proportions. It is not only wrong from a moral point of view, but it is abnormal. Sick emotion from a psychiatric standpoint. Only madmen could have devised the final solution, the plan to exterminate every single Jew. The hatred of our enemies today is abnormal, and that is what is frightening. Lavan was ready to kill his own daughters because they had adopted a God he did not understand. He felt so alienated from them that he kindled an insane hatred against his own children and grandchildren.